Well, we are just so excited here on Generation in Between to have our very first guest, a very special guest, Yay. And that is Amanda Hornberger.
Yay,
hooray, claps. Hooray, clap, clap, applause. So Amanda is an actor who graduated with a BFA in musical theater from UCF, go Knights, and has performed at regional theaters around the country, most notably as a young Tammy Wynette in Stand By Your Man. She writes and performs 1950s rockabilly style music and sang backup for an ultimate Elvis tribute artist.
Yes.
We are so excited to have her here because today we are here, which what I would argue is one of her most notable roles to date.
Iconic.
Playing Princess Diana herself in the regional premiere of Diana that recently closed at the Henniger Center here in Melbourne, Florida.
Like yesterday.
Literally
just a few hours ago.
Yesterday, yeah. So little disclaimer, listeners, I'm here with Danny, who was in Diana as well, in the ensemble. And then Amanda, who was Diana, and they closed the show and had a little cast party last night and then agreed to meet me this morning for this interview.
I love how y'all are both looking at me and laughing.
We are looking Thanks. At you and laughing. Okay, I'll look at Thanks. Amanda and laugh too. Okay,
now Danny's I feel better. Never looked cuter.
My voice is struggling because I was up way late and I'm old. Katie's voice is different because she's been a little sick.
I've been a little under the weather.
And Amanda's perfect.
Amanda
even
is
though
perfect.
She was out as late as me. So...
But even with feeling a little congested, I really wanted to do just this one thing, if you guys can indulge me.
I love it. Okay.
Welcome to the show, Diana.
Yes.
Diana.
Dun, 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 dun. Love it.
Okay, so let me just, before we get into all the awesome... Oh my gosh,
Danny
guys.
Will have her solo later.
Yes, don't worry. Don't worry, it'll come out.
Something. Amanda also is one of our like OG listeners too.
I guess we should point that out as
right?
well.
I am a big fan.
She is a fan.
Yes. So she does listen to the podcast. So it's not just like we're like, come on in. And she was like, what's going on? She knew exactly.
Oh, I know. I've been shouted out twice.
She has.
Yes.
That's facts.
So if you've heard the Amanda shout out, and I think we've only had one Amanda shout out, not like the Jennifers.
No, because there's so many Jennifers.
There's a lot of them.
Which, by the way, we did give Karen a shout out. So I guarantee when she hears this, she's going to be like, Katie and Danny, I need to be your next guest.
Oh, yes. Karen, please come to the show.
100%
I'd be happy to have Karen.
That'd be fun.
That'd be really fun.
Chaos.
And she can bring her little pup, Milo.
Oh.
You would love it. Oh, okay. Maybe not. I can just hold Milo for the whole interview and pet his beautifulness because I love him. Yes. Yeah, so, okay. So you're both in the show. So I went and saw the show twice. I was supposed to go a third time, but was feeling sick this weekend. Unfortunately, didn't get to go. But then my daughter took my ticket and it was the first time she'd seen it. She really enjoyed it. So it worked out. I loved this show. So for those of you that didn't see it, it's a lot of really energized music, kind of some rock music in there, very modern musical feel for sure, a high energy dancing ensemble. Right. So it's not just like dance numbers. It's like every group number is a dance number.
Preach out to that.
Yes. And Danny knows. And it's not a huge ensemble. So you've got ensemble playing several characters throughout,
yeah.
which I loved, which Danny did very well. You had lots of lines. You had different accents going on.
What? I know.
That was wild.
It was so much fun.
It was really fun.
We had a dialect
whales,
coach.
Danny.
Huh?
Come on, give us some whales.
Let's go home. Oh, that's good today.
That was
rasp.
Good.
Yeah, there we go.
That rasp is good for the whales.
That really made me feel like you were
like you're in well,
of
in
the
Wales.
People. Yeah. really, really good.
See, it really is fun to be on our podcast.
I love it.
It is fun.
We're just as much fun in person as we are to
We are.
To.
It's true, you guys. And then Amanda was one character, but how many costume changes did you
Yes.
have?
Okay. So I know how many costumes I had.
But not changes.
Yeah. So there was 23 costumes.
Okay.
But I did change.
Repurpose.
Yeah. Like there was some layering going uh-huh. on. There was some, well, we use this for this, but we'll put it back on for this. So I actually didn't count how many changes there were.
Okay.
On Broadway, she had like 34.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think they cut a few for me because we were on the struggle bus a little, but we figured it out.
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing. There's not any long period of time when you weren't on stage.
No.
There's barely any.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was like, there the whole show.
This weekend, there was something that happened with my mic. It got pulled up a little bit and was scratching on my mic tape. Mm-hmm. And the tech tried 3 times to fix it because I was like, I don't have time. I got to go.
I got to get back out there. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And just the like vocal endurance that would take really for the whole show, because again, it's this pretty small cast for how much singing there is. Yeah. But like for you personally, like how... Just as a vocalist, I'm just curious, how do you keep your voice healthy during the run of a show like that?
Well, I think I'm really lucky in that I had a really excellent voice teacher. So I started off when I was younger taking from a classical voice teacher. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of the opinion that you can't belt healthily, which mm-hmm. I don't agree with. So I ended up actually getting another voice teacher when I wanted to go to school for musical theater, who specialized in that musical theater belt.
Nice.
Shout out to Mrs. Abram. She's
hey, Mrs. Abram.
I was going to say, who is this?
She's fantastic.
I shall write her down.
Her name's Jo Abram.
Okay.
And I just feel like when I learned to belt as a young teenager, I learned how to place things in a way that doesn't do damage to my voice.
Nice.
So I feel like that's 90% of the work is not doing things with your voice that hurts it.
Yes.
I also like, I don't really drink. I don't smoke. I don't like, I've been drinking a lot of water this whole time and really making sure I get enough sleep.
Yeah.
And I make my own little like immune shot. Things that I was taking every day, mostly because we had a little sickness go through
my goodness.
A few people, like the guy I had to kiss. So
yes.
I
was
like,
but no, I think it's just when I'm in a show, my priority is taking care of my body and getting enough rest. And you almost have to baby yourself a little
bit. For sure.
And not be spending the time you're not doing the show like talking a lot, mm-hmm. not singing all the time when you are not using your voice.
Yeah.
And
that's a big one.
Yeah, it is.
I know one thing when I'm like vocal directing and I'm trying to warm up a cast or even some practice, I will say it's hard. I feel like it's hard when you're in a room of musical theater performers who belt to not outbelt each other.
Yes.
There's always that temptation. And what I really try to do and encourage my students and cast to do is to not give in to that, because you don't need the belt for like a warm up.
Right.
Necessarily. You might need to practice it. Like if you're about to go on stage, you need it for the performance or the audition. Right.
And I also, at least when I went to school for theater, one of the things we talked about is you're using those. It's a tool in your toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to go for the money note or there's certain moments to use your voice at full power, but if you start off a song that way or you're giving people that all the time, then it's no longer impressive.
Mm. Ah.
So you're picking moments to like go full voice.
Right.
But to me, real vocal technique is picking those moments artistically and also as an actor, choosing when to use those parts mm-hmm. of your voice. That it's serving the piece, not serving your own ego of seeing how loudly you can sing all the time
or all the time.
Being the center of attention all the time.
Yes.
You know, that you have to pick. Sometimes a quiet moment has even more power than a loud one.
Mm. That's
so
a great point.
Yeah.
I've just been lucky. You know, I'm glad that I started off learning more classical voice sounds. And I, you know, in school, we got the opportunity to sing a lot of different styles. And so I like tap, especially for this show. Diana's vocal part is all over the place.
Yeah.
Lots of different styles. Like there are parts where it is a little bit more in the classical-y side. And then in the very same song, I'm like rock belting.
Right.
Yeah.
So this particular role required a lot of just vocal technique and choices. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something I've had the opportunity to do. So
I love that so much. That. Yes. And so well. So let's get into the show then. I love all those vocal tips, by the way. Wouldn't be replaying this.
Katie's eyes were lighting up. It was like, great.
What? Yeah. What? Yes. Healthy singing
forever.
That sounds great. So tell us about before you took on this role. Tell us sort of your background on Diana. What did you know about her? Did you have a connection to her? Were you even alive in the same years that Diana was on this earth? Because I know you're younger than us, yes, Zennials.
Technically, I was born in 95. So okay. I
Ouch.
Was not old enough to remember being alive when Diana was alive. But I do remember, like, as a kid, my mom talking about her a little bit, just because you would still see, like, magazines with her face on it, mm-hmm. or, like, things on the news about things that were happening after her death. So I vaguely remember as a kid, like, my mom explaining who she was and, like, why she was important. Mm-hmm. So I always had a positive idea of who she was as a person, but I was never that into, like, the royals or much about that. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of can't escape knowing who they are.
Right.
But I don't feel like I really had much of a connection beyond she seemed like a cool person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's fair. So obviously, what sort of background work did you do aside from reading the script and, you know, maybe like watching the Netflix special, right? Yeah. That is this. What sort of background work did you end up doing to be able to prepare yourself for the role of Diana?
Well, I was pretty determined to not see too many other people playing her. Ooh. I wanted to watch her specifically giving speeches, her talking about her own life, mm-hmm. Especially since I was going to be playing her.
Right.
I didn't really want to listen to what a lot of other people, even who knew her, were like said about her.
Okay.
I wanted to go right to her and how she viewed herself, because I feel like that's a better reference as an actor. Now I'll probably go back and
right.
watch
now
the Crown or things
of
like
course.
That. But I was like, I want to make my own decision about who I think this person is.
That's smart.
And I have it right here, the Diana. I have the 25th anniversary edition of the book that Andrew Morton wrote. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he did make some edits.
Yeah, I have the same
her
one.
Death.
Yeah.
So what I love about this version is it actually has all the original transcripts of
yes.
her she recorded into a tape recorder all the answers to his questions he gave her. And so I read her own words and then what he did with her words.
Okay.
And that was my starting point as research. But a lot of, especially trying to get her voice down, I was watching like speeches she made, the famous Panorama interview, things like that, because her cadence and how she talks. What's really interesting about her is when she's speaking publicly, she comes off as a lot more shy mm-hmm. than when she's speaking to somebody she knows and is comfortable with, which most people are the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more outgoing when they're speaking publicly. And then when they're in private with other people, they're much more reserved.
Mm-hmm.
So she's very interesting in that for her, it was the complete opposite. She came off very, you know, her voice was a lot more breathy.
Yeah.
She's talking, you know, in public. And she actually had to train herself to – she took speech therapy and stuff like that in order to make public speeches and not appear as shy and have more confidence. Hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So I did a lot of that. I'm really into history. So when I go into a topic, I kind of go all in. mm-hmm. But this book was a great starting point for sure.
I love that.
That book. Have you read that book, Katie?
I haven't. I need to.
I listened to it.
Yes.
I listened to the audio, and he, I don't remember if he read all of it. I think he read the intro to the
Andrew Morton mm-hmm. did. Okay.
Yeah. And then somebody else reads the whole thing. But I am opposite than you because I grew up knowing all about her. So she died in 1997. Mm-hmm. So Katie and I were teenagers. I was 17. My mom was devastated. Like, I knew Diana. I knew all the things about her and the royal family because of my mom, right? But reading that, I was like, oh, I didn't know what I thought I knew. Like, mm-hmm. because it's her own words. And an interesting fact about that book, for y'all that don't know, Amanda and I know, nobody knew who gave him that she was the direct source for the recordings that he used for that book. Nobody knew until after she died. He didn't tell anyone. So right. It was anonymous.
So people figured, did some people think it yes. was her or just someone very close to the family?
And I can remember that when I, because I remember my mom like rushing to buy the book and it was just like a big, like, did she give it? She must have gave it or it must have been a friend. Like, it, mm-hmm. so it was definitely questionable. They asked her all the time about it.
And she, some of her close friends did give right. quotes for it as well. Like he did talk to other people yes. too, but they were kind of going for the plausible deniability mm-hmm. route. Like, mm-hmm. like, but there are things in there only she could have possibly yeah. told him.
Yeah. And she didn't, which was why the royal family was pissed.
Yeah.
Because she told the truth about them and how they treated
sorry,
her.
Sorry, not sorry.
I mean.
Seriously. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to read it. I'm glad I kind of have background, just what I know, but I yeah. bet if I read it, there'll be a lot more that I yeah. didn't realize.
And I will say a lot of, I don't know if you noticed this during the show, a lot of her direct quotes and stuff that she said in real life, some of which are in the book, are in the show or in the musical.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that Charles said, like whatever love means anyway, he really said that on an interview.
Oh, it's so awkward.
It's so awkward
it's
and horrible.
So cringe.
Their faces when he says that. Have you watched? I'm sure cringe. You watched it.
It's the engagement interview.
Yeah.
It's so cringy.
It's so bad.
So she's like sitting by him?
She is standing right next to him. And the question is, so you two are really in love or mm-hmm. something like that? And he goes, well, you know, depends on your interpretation of love. You know, whatever love means.
Anyway.
Ooh.
And she's just standing there, like she's like 19 or something.
Yeah.
And just looks deer in headlights. Like she looks like, what is happening?
I know.
Right now?
Oh. Jerk.
Oh sorry. My gosh.
I don't care.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry if y'all like Prince Charles or King Charles. Sorry, excuse
yeah,
me.
Yeah, watch out.
They can't do nothing to me.
He's coming for you.
No, I'm just
kidding.
I don't
know.
I don't know. Can they? Oops. Maybe we need to edit that
no,
out.
No.
He's a
they
little busy.
They have zero
right now.
Power. Yeah. Like, and he's oh, wait, also not they? Well enough. He's not well enough.
He's a little busy right
yeah.
now.
Oh, true facts. Okay.
Well, based on then the research that you did and reading the book and just probably people you've spoken to since taking on this role and people talking to you about it, what do you think are some things people get wrong about Diana? And I'd love to hear from you too, Danny, after that, since you said you had to revisit your own thoughts on maybe things that you thought weren't actually the true case.
Yeah.
But what do you think, Amanda?
I feel like I have a few things on like kind of opposing ends of the spectrum. So I'll start with, people think that she was a saint. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
She was not. Mm-hmm. She was a hot mess express.
As most humans
which
are.
Which is why we love her, right. though. Like,
because she's relatable.
That makes her better. Like, that makes her more relatable, more amazing for the fact that just like the rest of us, she was messy. Just like the rest of us, when she was in love, she did things she regretted later.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, I mean, but... She literally pushed her stepmother down a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
Like she did some stuff that was not great, y'all.
Yeah.
I mean, they made up later.
Oh.
They made up later. Well. But, like, she was a person just like everybody else. And I think sometimes people elevate her to a level that isn't fair. And people do that a lot with people who are that level of famous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the problem. That is part of what kills these people is you think that they are not a person and therefore you don't have to treat them like they're a person.
Yeah.
Mm. I think that deifying someone is just as harmful as like abusing them.
Yeah.
In some ways. So I think that's what people get wrong is they want to elevate her above the level of humanness that she's due.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, I think there are also people who will fling mud or make up stories that aren't true when you really look into them. One of the biggest that I found actually was like her relationship with James Hewitt.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful relationship. And people treated him terribly, still do.
Mm-hmm.
They were together for 5 years. in a very beautiful relationship.
Wow.
I mean, he was even going to meet up with her, had talked to her on the phone like shortly before she passed. Wow. Like they had a beautiful connection, friendship, romance. And I feel like that whole chapter of her life has been really reduced to drama and scandal. And when you really hear what happened between them, you root for them. At least I did. Like,
yeah.
And so I think it's kind of nice to know that she had that type of love at one point. And it was actually the whole media circus of their relationship surfacing that separated them, not anything that happened between them. Yeah. And, you know, everybody still wants to make drama about James Hewitt being Harry's dad and all this stuff.
Harry was already born, everybody.
He was already born. James Hewitt was teaching riding lessons to Diana.
Both kids.
And was part of the kids' lives from day one. So it's not a thing.
He was already born.
Please leave Prince Harry alone.
They didn't know each other before he was born, guys.
Yes. And that's probably something easily proven, but just nobody, like, you know. Well, not that we need to prove it, but
Prince
Harry
and James Hewitt have repeatedly gone on the record saying, why is this still a thing?
And how dumb. It's just because they both have red hair. Like, what?
Like, yeah.
I mean, you can have red hair. Like, we have a kid who has red hair. Nobody in our family has red hair. But guess what? He's my husband.
It's called recessive genes.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Exactly. It does happen here and there. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's my answer for that.
I really
one.
Thought those were very, very thoughtful. I know we've talked on this podcast before in general about the abuse of fame and elevating, kind of, you said, elevating people to this level where they're not human anymore and the danger of that.
Yeah.
Because it's, A, like you said, it's not fair and it's setting a standard they should, no one should have to live up to. And then it also makes them, you know, more in danger, I feel like, of being attacked or chased, or in Diana's case, needing this $1 million picture or whatever it may be, just because they've been elevated to that level. So I really appreciate that you said that. And also that she had flaws.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's fine. It's fine to admire people and be sad for people who've had a tragic ending who were people.
Yeah.
They don't have to be perfect for you to feel that way.
She did do a lot of wonderful good really in the world.
Definitely.
And I think it's important to know that you don't have to be some special, incredible, like, elevated being for the world to be so much better because you're in it.
Yes. Mm.
That's the beauty of her story, is she wasn't anybody special.
Yeah.
But she made her life special.
Right.
Because of who she was and what she chose to do with her time.
Mm-hmm.
We can all do that.
Oh, yeah. I wish that the line at the very end of the show in the Netflix version made it into the version we had to perform, because it was my absolute favorite line of the whole show. And the line is, they say, the people who will change the world are not the ones you think will change the world. And I loved it because also Charles was the one who sang it. Do you remember that? You've watched the Netflix.
Yeah.
Charles was the one who sang it because he's King of England. Well, he was prince at the time. But so obviously you think all these big giant people are going to be world changers, when it's like what you said, it's the people who are doing the things in their daily life that really change the collective world as we know it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, she chose to use the power she came upon in a way that was meaningful. And there is a line in the show where she talks about that. Like, what's the point in having power if we don't use it to help people?
Correct. Yes.
And I feel like she set a standard. Like, we now expect celebrities to show up for charities, to do good in the world, to use their wealth in a positive way. That was not an expectation prior to Princess Diana.
Yeah. Yep. I hadn't thought about that. That is true.
That's a good point.
That is her legacy. That's what she has left for, like, from now on, there's a before and after.
Yeah.
And there's a public expectation that if you have that level of power, you will be doing something good with it.
Yeah.
And that was an example she set.
Absolutely. Okay. So a little bit of a twist here. Ooh, 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 ooh. Hold on to your butts, listeners.
Hold on to your butts. Love it.
All right. I wrote this question. Are you, Amanda, the actor, personally sympathetic to Charles and Camilla and their love?
Dun, dun, dun.
What's going to happen?
Oh, gosh. This is a rough one. Okay. Can I say yes and no?
Of course.
You can say whatever you want.
Say whatever you want.
What I am sympathetic to is I think if they had had their own decision, they would have just been together.
Yeah.
I think if there wasn't this weird virginity expectation.
I know. It's so weird, right?
So bizarre. Yeah.
So gross.
So like the whole thing, at least from what I know, the whole thing about him not being able to be with Camilla is that she wasn't a virgin.
I thought she was already married.
No. Yeah. Okay. So
she wasn't married
yet. About this.
Oh, yeah. We did. You're right. Okay. I'm wrong. You're right. Correct.
So basically the palace orchestrated Camilla getting married to Andrew Parker Bowles because he used to date what? Princess Anne?
Yeah.
And Camilla was dating Charles.
Yes.
And like the queen didn't like those pairings for some reason. Again, the only reason I can think of is Camilla wasn't a virgin or something, so she wasn't a good candidate for princess. I don't know. But basically, it was this whole orchestration to get Andrew and Camilla together so that they couldn't be with Princess Anne and Prince Charles.
Okay.
Which is weird.
I mean, the royal family has the weirdest stipulation.
Like, because you caused this whole thing that ruined this young woman's life.
I know.
Like, you stole her youth from her because
and it ruined their lives.
And then
too.
They just end up together anyway.
Correct.
Like, come on, y'all. We could have skipped to
20, 30 years, but, whatever.
Again, hindsight's 2020.
I know.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. But on that level, I empathize because, like, if they're still together today, they obviously had something important together.
Yeah.
And it's sad that that just wasn't allowed to be so that everyone else didn't have to suffer.
Yes.
Comma, however.
Comma.
Comma, however.
However. I still feel like the decisions that were made by them that they did have power over, they didn't have to treat her terribly.
Right.
They didn't have to gaslight her.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They could have been upfront about what scenario she was agreeing to, and she might have agreed to it.
Yeah, she might have.
Like, she was so young.
But
she
also saw, I think, when you hear Diana speak about why she chose this, she felt a higher calling. She felt like she was meant to be in a position of power so she could do good in the world. She might have agreed to that scenario. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is, though, then he would have had to agree to her terms as well.
Right.
She would have had to be allowed to also have her own relationships and her own life.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he was willing to do that. I think he would have rather had his cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, like, it does. She wasn't given the choice.
And this is also the 80s.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's easy to look back at it from a modern lens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, these are not conversations that were being had in the 80s.
Right.
Like, what are the terms of our relationship? Like,
well, and also, it's the royal family.
That's consent talk that they didn't have in the
80s. Yeah. Right.
Totally. Yeah. No one did, let alone.
And it's the royal family. You have all these expectations.
All these antiquated ways that they still operate under.
And do you know what's funny? Now my history brains.
I love that.
History brains.
So antiquated is actually not true. Most of the royal family traditions come from Queen Victoria, who was not that long ago, y'all. Mm-mm. That's like 200 years.
Facts.
So all this stuff that they do, that they're like, this is royal tradition.
It's not. It is, but.
Queen Victoria decided on it 200 years ago because she was super eccentric and decided this is how she wanted to do things. Like, you can change this at any time, y'all.
I love that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, 200 years is pretty antiquated, Amanda.
I guess I know what you mean.
It's not from the dawn of time.
Right. It's not like always.
When you think about the royal family going back to the 14, 15, right. 1100, mm-hmm. however right, right, long. Right. Like, this is a new concept.
These are new.
These are new traditions. Yeah. They're mm-hmm. traditions, but like, you can reevaluate that whenever you choose.
Right.
Yeah. And I think too, it almost felt like everything I know about it and from watching the show, that the royal family almost felt like they were doing Diana a favor and mm-hmm. that she shouldn't complain because right. now she's like princess and going to be queen. And so she shouldn't have any sort of agency.
Yeah.
Because she was being given this thing. And obviously that is totally messed up. But I feel like maybe part of the reason they didn't have the conversations and all of that is because that's maybe genuinely how they felt she should feel. I don't know.
I think that they just were very disconnected uh-huh. from any type of experience that any regular person was having. Mm-hmm. And so their expectations of what she would and wouldn't know or what she – the assumptions that were made about how she was supposed to feel about things. I just think when you're at that level of privilege and you have no contact or context for anything outside of that – it's almost like your growth is stunted, like mm-hmm. your social skills are not there. And I just feel like that's what happened there is she came in with her own expectations. They had a whole different set and they weren't communicating about it. Mm-hmm. And if she tried totally. To communicate about it, she yeah. was gaslit.
Right. Correct. Oof. I think gosh. Too, like speaking of the gaslighting, I didn't realize how I knew she had, you know, mental health struggles. I did not realize that they knew about them for so long.
Oh.
The depth of it.
So that's, yeah.
That is, because you had asked me, like, what mm-hmm. I had thought about the book. That was my biggest takeaway, was I had no idea, probably because when I knew all about her, I was a teenager. So maybe I just didn't pay attention. You know what I'm saying? Like, which is not a diss on teenagers.
It's like,
right. Yeah, you just had other things.
Like,
right.
There might need to be a little, like, disclaimer, trigger warning here.
But yes.
Like, they thought that her bulimia was the cause
right.
of the problems in the marriage.
Right.
She explains in her Panorama interview, she's like, they didn't realize that that was the symptom of the right. issues that I was having.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was, oh, poor Charles, that he correct. Has to deal with her being sick all the time. I mean, like, this poor woman was pregnant, having morning sickness,
yeah.
and making herself throw up, like, five times a day yeah. on top of the morning sickness.
And, I mean,
like, terrible.
That's just, yeah. awful. And it, like, you have to have professional help to hand, and they wouldn't.
Well, she got it eventually.
Eventually, they did give it to her. She had multiple, for those of y'all that don't know about Diana, she had multiple suicide attempts, one of which was when she was pregnant. I don't remember if it was with William or Harry.
She threw herself down the stairs while she was pregnant with Prince William.
Yeah. Because they wouldn't help her. And I think it was after that that they were like, okay. But it was the royal family.
When you say they, let's be clear,
yeah.
The queen, because yes. Charles decided to not cancel his riding plans for that afternoon.
Correct.
Because she was being overdramatic.
Mm, yeah.
But the queen then sought help.
Well, they got their royal family doctor person.
And she did start, her therapist started giving her books about eating disorders.
Yes.
Okay.
And she talks about how, oh my gosh, for the first time I realized other people are going through this too.
Right.
Oh, wow.
But she would have to hide all the books she was reading from staff, from anybody seeing it in the place where she lived.
Right.
She had to hide what she was reading because they couldn't risk it leaking that yeah. she was struggling with this.
Right.
Even though so many people do.
Oh, my goodness.
Just trapped in her
yeah.
own life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally trapped.
Oh. And of all the families in the world that could access the best oh. care.
100%.
It's, you know, it's just really frustrating that that wasn't provided to her.
And again, like you said, it's the 80s. And I mean, we're in 2024 and there is still stigma surrounding mental health care.
Absolutely.
Which I cannot stand. Like, still. So back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No. And postpartum depression. Nobody talked about that.
Yeah.
And she had it extremely bad with both kids. And I have lived through that. I had it with both my kids. And my first kid was born in 2006, and even people didn't talk about it a lot then. And if they did, it was very like, I don't like, what's the right word I'm looking for? Not hush hush, but it was
kind of like behind closed doors. Yeah. Like you can talk about it, but not publicly. Kind right. of thing.
It was just, and I remember Brooke Shields. I don't know if you remember this.
I remember this.
She came out with a book on it, and that literally made me feel so seen. So I get it. Like when she was like reading a book, because you, when you do struggle with mental health issues, anybody out there, you do feel like you're the only one. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And I can't imagine how awful that was for them to be, like, oh, we know you need help, but like hide it. And then she's like, oh, good, I'm seen, but not really, because I can't fully be.
And then you add the layer of, you have to remember at the time when she was struggling with all of that, that first tour they did, when she went to Wales, that scene we do, she was newly pregnant, having morning sickness, struggling with bulimia, and expected daily with no nutrients in her body to go out and meet all of these strangers and perform perfectly every time. Mm. And, you know, she had overwhelmingly positive reviews on that tour. And you think about that and you're like, why should anyone ask a person to do that?
Right.
One. But number two, like, that's also a testament to her own strength and power.
Correct. Yeah.
Is she did that.
Mm-hmm. Despite all those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, ugh. What a nightmare. What a nightmare.
Right? I know.
Wow. Well, so kind of to that point.
So that was a long answer. That's a long answer
to Charles and Camilla.
I know.
But no, it kind of feeds into another question I have, which sort of brings us to modern times. And that question is your thoughts on Harry, Prince Harry, Meghan Markle, how they've removed themselves from the royal family. And, you know, there's all sorts of stories behind that. But basically, right, them doing that because they wanted to protect their own family unit and not be part of the all the shenanigans, right, of the royal family. So I often think of that sort of in comparison to Princess Di, right? Like Harry and Meghan both saying, like, we don't want to be that. And then now there's even more. Now there's this stuff with Kate Middleton and a lot of questions about what's going on with her health and what we're what we know and what we don't know and what's being hidden from the public. So the question is, what are your thoughts on Harry and Meghan removing themselves from the royal family? And do you think what happened to his mother has anything to do with Harry's choice in that matter?
Well, I've listened to a few interviews with Harry. And I would like, at some point, I would like to read his book.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
He reads it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I would like to read it. I didn't get a chance to before this process. But, I mean, I can see why, if that's your history and if what happened to your mother happened that way, I'm not surprised that that would be their decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's important. I'm not British, so there's only so much I can kind of talk about, I think. But from the outside, it does kind of seem like, is this, what purpose is this serving anyone anymore? If everybody within this system is completely miserable, like, what are you doing this for? To hold on to family heirlooms that are really expensive and to hold onto a lot of money that you didn't earn.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think if I was born into the royal family, I would be asking those questions too. And I think it's a good thing that they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I also know I heard some things about, like, you know, kind of in retaliation, the palace is saying, like, we're not going to give you any protection or anything like that. And you're thinking, well, you don't get to stop being Harry.
I know.
Like Prince Harry.
You don't cease to exist.
You don't stop being seen and looked at and everything you do being watched just because you decide you don't feel like it anymore.
Right.
Right.
So I think there's both sides of that is they were born into it and that doesn't magically go away.
Right.
But I also think trying to take a new tack on it, I'm in support of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say I agree. What do you think?
I agree too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, in his book, he does talk a little bit about after she died. And I mean, I will say that both her kids seem to have really appreciated her and what she did. And he even says, like, I try to think of my mom when I'm doing charity work, because that is one of the biggest things that him and William said they remember her for.
She would take them.
Yeah, because she would bring them with.
Because she was so scared that they would be so detached from the regular person.
And it, I mean, I think that it worked because he talks about that. Like, it was so important to her. And now that's really important to him because, you know, I had another thought, but it left me. So I was like, where am I going?
Well, Harry was in the military too, right?
And Diana also insisted that they go to like public school because Charles wanted to have them privately tutored and basically never leave the palace and like never have contact. Because he's like, well, that's how I was raised. And you're like, oh, bud.
Well, see how that turned out. Sir.
Sorry.
I'm not.
But it is like, she really advocated for them getting experiences in the world and trying to give them as normal a life, especially Prince William, because she was like, if you're going to be king someday, you need to know what you're ruling. You need to know what who the people are that your decisions affect. And I think that's really amazing.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That is really amazing. So you've touched on this already today, but I'm just curious what this role has meant to you personally, playing Diana, whether it's a connection to her or just in general. You know, I know you had mentioned to us before, you know, you hadn't, after COVID, performing hadn't been as much or as often or at all. So kind of hitting the stage again in such a public way, in such a big role, like, what has this process meant to you as a performer?
I'll try to get through this without crying. There are a lot of things about Diana that I relate to, which surprised me because obviously her life is so different from mine. But, you know, I lost my home in COVID, lost all my work. Like, I was starting to build up a life where I could sustain myself as a performer, and like in a day it was gone. And so for the longest time, it's like even trying to sing, I would cry and I wouldn't be able to get through it. And to be offered something like this, someone who's so important to so many people, someone who I admire the way that she lived her life. And also, you know, I've been that person who, you know, I was on my own for a lot of that time during COVID, or separated from anybody I knew. Like, if I didn't have my dog, y'all, I probably wouldn't be here. It was really bad. And so I know what those feelings of desperation can feel like, when you feel like there's nothing I can do to get out of this situation. I'm doing my best and it's still not enough.
Right.
And, you know, that perfectionism thing that I feel like as a young woman, and especially a young woman who is like conventionally beautiful, there's a certain kind of struggle to that, that, you know, not to be pretty privileging over here, but there are certain struggles that come with that too.
Yeah. Sure.
And feeling like, well, if all people see at first of me is that I'm pretty, well, then I need to be extraordinary in other ways so that they see those parts of me too. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But then nobody wants you to be excellent.
Right.
So
and pretty. How dare you?
So you're
how
too dare. Much or you're either too much or you're not enough.
Right.
And those are the things about her that I feel like I can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like I've always been a romantic, and I feel like she definitely is.
Yeah. Too.
Like she and she's also was very into like astrology, and she was psychic, which I am too.
Yeah.
So there's just even things like that that I relate to about her, that I was reading her book and going, yeah, like she actually foresaw her father's like heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Like she was like something's going to happen to my dad. And then she got the phone call and he was in the hospital. Like, things like that happened to me a lot. And it's been really cool because I feel it's like a soul sister, you know? Aww. And like, it felt really special to get to try to tell her story in a way that was, I hope, authentic and meaningful and sensitive. Mm-hmm. And I also was just, it's been really wonderful to be in a group of people that have just embraced me wholeheartedly. Because you come into that and you think, okay, I'm playing Diana in Diana the Musical. How many of the other girls in this show wanted to play this part? Oh. How many of these people are like everybody's eyes are on me, uh-huh. needing me to be like deliver. And it actually turned out being the opposite, that I felt like everybody else was just like holding me on their shoulders.
Aww. Oh, I love that.
Oh no, now I'm gonna cry.
You know, even as an audience member, I felt that. Like, I felt the really camaraderie of the cast on stage, you know, yeah. that you all had each other's backs, that you were all in it to win it. Nobody was trying to outdo anybody else. Everyone was perfectly playing whatever part they were supposed to be in that scene, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think even as an audience member, I felt that. So I can imagine how that must have felt to be part of the cast.
Yeah, and especially like scenes with Scotty, who played Prince Charles, like we're good friends in real life now. And so him being mean to me on stage, like, we could really go there because we had that rapport off stage.
Yeah.
Same thing with me and Kyle, who played James Hewitt. Yeah. Like, I felt like we had really good chemistry on stage. Mm-hmm. And it was important to me. To be honest, those scenes were like some of the most important to me. Because it was the only time in the show, really, where she was fully happy, fully seen, fully loved. And when I read James Hewitt's book, it kind of like confirmed, oh, like there was real love there and real care. And like, I wanted people to see that too, because I feel like their relationship, like I said, has been so misconstrued.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you want that for her. Like, you want someone to see her and be there for her and to support her, because she's the type of person who would do that the other way around.
Yes.
And she did. I mean, when he fought on the front lines of the Gulf War, she sent him like hundreds of letters. She sent his squadron like whiskey and candies and all this stuff. And like, he talks about how like, I couldn't tell them who it came from. I couldn't tell them who it came from, but I knew.
Yeah.
That she was the one boosting all of our morale. And it's kind of, so it's sweet. Very sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, now, granted, they
they might have figured it out.
She was married when they were together. So there is that. But I feel like it was sensationalized. Like, I mean, Charles had an affair the whole time they were married.
They were married in name only at the point at
I agree.
She got involved with James Hewitt.
I agree with you. And I mean, Charles also was doing his business, so whatever.
If he gets to do, like,
I mean,
if you're going to give your wife absolutely zero affection and basically be like, well, you had two kids and now I don't ever want to touch you again.
Yeah.
Then what do you expect to happen?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Dang.
That's okay. She's
like, the two married ladies in here are like, wait a second. No, I'm just kidding.
No,
but you're right. I mean, you know, a marriage and a relationship has to be 50-50 and everything, or it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And if you have one partner that's giving the all, another one's just like, you're setting yourself up for a disaster.
It's not sustainable.
No, it's not.
Not at all.
You're setting yourself up for a situation.
And it's like, if she wasn't the Princess of Wales,
correct,
anybody
they would have been divorced
advocating for this relationship,
right?
No.
And they would have split. Like, let's be real.
Exactly.
They would not have been married as long as they were.
It was the confines of the relationship that made it, you know, kind of the way they had to operate within it.
I'm by no means going, cheating is fine.
No.
Like, infidelity is great.
I was just being devil's advocate.
Yeah, I get you.
That's what I do sometimes.
I just feel like he already broke the contract of their marriage before it even began.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were not happily married. Like, they were not.
Well, I don't think that's something I ever really knew, that him and Camilla were a pre-Diana thing.
Oh, really?
I think just growing up, I just always thought it was like an affair that happened after they were married or after she had the boys.
She was at their wedding.
It really wasn't until I saw this show, and of course, like, I need to read the books too, that I was like, oh, this was like pre-dating the marriage. And that makes you look at it a little differently too.
It does.
Because it makes you more like kind of what you said. Well, if they could have just like done their thing,
girl into being a pawn in your chess game, but you didn't bank on her being intelligent.
Right.
Right.
Boop.
Oops, they were wrong about that.
Well, I do have
I love it. I do have to say though,
like, random side note about the show. As serious as we have talked about it, please know that it is so campy AF.
Yes.
Like, it is so campy, and it's like, if people, I mean, now granted, there are plenty of serious scenes and heart-tugging scenes and songs, but it's campy and it is over the top. And I feel like audiences, like, it's a very niche show.
Yeah.
And if you don't know that it's going to be campy and you think you're going to see some serious, y'all, just, you're not. So, I mean, watch it on Netflix because I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
Prepare for swear words and tight pants.
Correct.
Yes.
Rock music.
It's great. Exactly. I mean, it is campy AF, which is why I loved it so much. That's my favorite kind of show to do.
Yes.
I love it.
And I loved particularly the way the Henninger did it, where it just kept moving.
Yeah.
There was like no moment that dragged out, like the scene, like one scene was going into the next scene. And I mean, there were maybe a few moments that like hung on a little bit for effect, but then they really worked because there were so few of those.
Yeah.
And there was never a time when you were like looking at your program, like, when's intermission or whatever. Like, I was just like in it to win it. Like, the scrim went down for intermission. I was like, huh? Like, oh, okay. Like, I was not keeping track of any time and know what's going on. I was just totally in it. It was so fun.
That's awesome.
You guys really did a good job doing that. Okay. So we kind of touched on this too, but we have our final question on here that we think Danny wrote.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. I don't.
But we're not sure.
I wrote it. I don't know who else wanted
it. Would you like to read it?
Well, Katie has this Google Doc and she wrote all the questions and I did go in here. But I don't remember writing this. And I did not write this last night, so I
we don't think,
because that would explain why I don't remember it. But okay, are you ready, Amanda?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So why do you think Diana will always be remembered as the people's princess? So the media gave her that tagline, or not tagline, title, and I think it's very fitting. But there's a two-part question. So also, why do you think that was so needed during the time she was alive to have a people's princess? Mm. So two-parter. Sorry.
That's a good question. I think that she holds that title and always will, because I do think she was the first royal to genuinely try to relate to the everyday person.
Yeah.
Some of that comes from the fact that, yes, she came from nobility, but she wasn't necessarily raised like a lot of nobles at the time. Like, her parents were divorced and that was a big taboo.
Yeah.
Her mom ended up living in a flat in London. So she had some more everyday contact than what I think a lot of people in the nobility at that time had.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think she was the first one to really see the importance of that and make an effort in that way. And I think her story is very much one of, it's like, what's that age old question? Like, do the times make the person or does the person make the times? Like, I feel like, you know, if you believe some of what Diana believed, it's like there's almost this cosmic aligning of she was exactly the right person at the right time. In a time period where people were asking for change.
Yeah.
And in a time period where people were, especially women, were wanting to be seen in a different way and to have an example of someone with all the pressure to do the other thing, to fall in line, to conform, she was just the right personality to say, I don't feel like it. And yeah. I have a sense of humor and I'm fun and young and I want to live my life.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm smart, even though they yeah. think I'm not.
Right.
And you know what? I have something to offer beyond wearing pretty clothes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that. It's she just happened to come along and be the right person at the right time in the right place. And in that way, I agree with her own kind of view of herself that she was destined for something mm-hmm. that was bigger than her mm-hmm. that maybe she didn't even understand.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think sometimes when you have that kind of destiny, it doesn't necessarily mean you're promised a lot of happiness.
Yeah. Hmm.
You're carrying a lot to
That's
do that.
That's a great
that.
Point. Yeah.
But I think what we see now, the outpouring of love, the way people think about her now, mm-hmm. it shows you that it mattered. Whatever happened mattered.
Right.
You just wish that she could have gotten a little bit more. You wish she could have gotten a little bit more reward for the yeah. things that she did.
Right.
Yes. That I think that's right. The legacy of her and even just the amount of money and spotlight she even put on causes. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned earlier, A, it's sort of set an expectation for other people in power yep. that exists today and continues to sort of the snowball effect of that, right? And then also the actual work, like the amount of money that went to HIV research or, you know, hungry children, landmines,
yeah.
whatever. Those actual things that the money she raised went to, those tangible things, and how each of those things impacts however many lives, you know, and she was able to use it for that. I just think it's, I wish she could have had more years on this earth to do more of that. I think we all do.
Yeah.
And especially since she had so little time outside the confines.
I know.
Of
2 years,
royal
right?
family.
Not even.
Not even 2 years.
She and Charles got divorced in 96.
Yeah.
Wow. It was like almost a year to the date that she died.
That's right.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I am so grateful that after a 4-week run and you're getting ready to drive home, that you stopped by studio to talk to us about this really important show. And I'm personally very sad that you won't be close to us, but hopefully you'll be back soon or we'll be able to come see you perform up there.
I know.
I'll have to come visit anyway.
Yes, come visit. We're trying to convince her to come to Golden Apples.
Oh yeah, you have to.
See?
Yeah.
That's what we told her.
Well, you have to dress up.
Because you'll probably perform.
You'll probably perform. So you must come.
Yeah, you must
come. And we think that's probably July-ish, usually. Last year it was late because of the
June.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll ask.
So it won't be too long then.
Yay.
If you come for that, then we'll get to see you. And thank you so much for coming. Thank you for being a listener.
Yeah.
Generation in Between.
That's probably what I'll be catching up on my episodes as I drive back to Atlanta.
I love that. That'd be perfect. There we go. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Amanda.
Amanda.
We'll have links to how you can follow Amanda in our show notes, her music and just her social profiles. It's too late for you to go see her as Diana. Sorry you missed it, y'all.
Yeah.
But there's some pretty great pictures on all of her socials. You can also check those out on any of the Henniger Center's social media as well. And Danny's in some of those pictures, too.
As a blonde, though.
Yeah.
So. It's kind of like Where's Waldo? Can you spot Danny?
Uh-huh.
Which one is she? And thanks again for listening to Generation In Between, and we will see you next time.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.